to Agronomy for Farmer Success, a podcast brought to you by Osmus Farm Supply.
Hello, this is Bill Schrader, Osmus Farm Supply agronomist and agronomist with AFS Seed. I'm back with Blake Huntington again today. Today it's actually September 20th and harvest is right around the corner. So we thought we'd do a little podcast on some of the things that Blake and I have been seeing out in the fields. We're going to talk a little bit about diseases and insects and maybe some weather observations that have been made. Blake, you walk a ton of fields throughout the year. What have you been noticing for diseases?
So I would say, you know, early on, pre-tassel area, even a little bit past tassel, I wasn't seeing much for diseases. Later on here, we have seen gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight show up in pretty heavy doses. A lot of the time after fungicide application was already done. And I've seen a little bit of physoderma in some of these fields, but again, nothing, no significant hard pressure that I've seen. And then obviously I travel a little bit outside of just north central Iowa, southern Minnesota, and there is tar spot out there. I started seeing it fairly heavy here in the last 2 weeks in north central Iowa and in southern Minnesota, but I wouldn't say it's significant pressure. I can just easily find the lesions.
Mm-hmm. For an average person that doesn't really do a lot of disease identification, let's go through those diseases a little bit. So when you're seeing physoderma, what are you noticing out in the cornfield?
Physoderma actually does, it can stem from a leaf lesions, and you can notice it early on, and sometimes the plant also doesn't show it. So what's sometimes significant about that is that it affects late season standability, because the node of that plant essentially becomes necrotic, and you can easily depict a heavy physoderma field on a day like today. If it's really windy, you could be out in the field and you're just hearing a pop, and we call it the pop of death, because those nodes are essentially breaking and the plant just snaps off, almost kind of like a green snap form. That's the one thing I look for. So I look for just like necrotic lesions kind of around that node on physoderma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And gray leaf spot. Well, that's more of a visual effect on the leaves, right?
Yep, gray leaf spot, yeah. And, you know, some people maybe get a little bit confused with northern corn leaf blight. You're going to have a little bit smaller lesions. They can be together, probably a little bit more square or rectangle versus the cigar-type lesions you're going to see out of northern corn leaf blight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and then the big one that, you know, I'm sure has been talked about on our podcast before, and it's a topic off the tongues of many growers nowadays, is tar spot. And to me, I think that's been out in some fields for the last 2 or 3 years, but definitely it's starting to creep in more and more. What have you seen? Where are areas where you've seen more tar spot or less? What has your observations been going through this season?
So I do have the privilege to be able to cover all of eastern Iowa and southern Minnesota. So I would say where I'm seeing most of my heavier pressure is going to be in the southeast Minnesota area, eastern Iowa parts. It's more selective. Kind of in north central Iowa here, southern Minnesota, south central Minnesota, I'm not seeing the impact in as early onset as what I'm seeing in those other areas. And when the pressure seems to come in, we're pretty close to black layer for the most part, or grain fill, and it doesn't seem to really overtake the plant, but it's extremely easy to find like the specklings and the lesions on each plant. And like Bill, you just said, it has been present for the last 2 or 3 years, but it's came in extremely late. I didn't find it last year until closer to October and throughout October, and we pretty much had senesced by that point. So for whatever reason, we just haven't had probably the weather patterns to exploit it here in this part, but it's obviously here and it's something to be concerned about, and but don't fret over it. As of right now, it's kind of tough to select hybrids that are actually probably tolerant to these or have a response to tar spot, because it's ever changing, and every year is really different with tar spot.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned some of the mother diseases, like, the northern corn leaf blight in particular. We know certain hybrids are more tolerant to that. We've got a pretty good handle on it, but tar spot being a newer disease, we really haven't got a good feel yet on which products are going to be a little better. And maybe the genetics hasn't quite caught up to that disease, or the breeding, I guess I should say, hasn't quite caught up to that disease yet. So, you know, the last 2 years, would you say it's worse this year than last year, or about the same?
I would say we're sitting about the same. Like I said, last year, it would have been the end of September, beginning of October, I started finding specklings in fields. And I'm sure there's isolated incidences where I found a little bit in Winnebago County and Hancock County, at the end of July, but that was extremely rare instance, heavy corn on corn rotation, and the disease was present the previous 2 or 3 years. So I would say we're sitting about the same, and we're pretty healthy right now, so that's going to benefit us. Where I've noticed when the plant kind of gets overtaken by tar spot, it's typically a compromised plant. So a plant that doesn't have help, probably didn't have a fungicide application. And we've had, you know, a lot of fungicide got sprayed this year, and we also had an abundance amount of moisture. So it just kept that natural plant's ability to fend stuff off better.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, you know, the last 2 years certainly have been on the dry side. You know, last year and then this year, maybe it's almost been in this local area around Rake, maybe up into Minnesota, sort of the tail of two seasons. You know, we had that early spring moisture that kind of kept us out of the field, where we were never completely saturated in the soil profile, but the top was wet. And then it got extremely dry, right, through June and July. And then now in August, we started getting rains. And I think that's led to an environment that suits some of these diseases, probably a little better for the northern corn. Yep. Right? It's a little bit better for the tar spot. And I think there's a lot of debate early on, and maybe you consulted some customers on this too. People were wondering, should I put a fungicide on my beans or corn? It's really dry. I'm not seeing much for disease. I don't know what kind of crop I'm going to get if it doesn't start raining. And in this area, I think it's going to be a good thing, because we did start getting those rains and the environment has changed. So there is a lot more diseases out there. But really interesting year. You know, I think tar spot is the type of thing that definitely want to keep scouting, but I wouldn't, like you said, I don't know if it means we need to panic about it quite yet either.
No, so. And I don't think so. I mean, especially with it being present here the last couple years or few years, hybrids are just going to get better for it. I mean, I know that there's companies out there giving out tar spot scores, and a lot of that is internal because there isn't a lot of breeding selection for specifically tar spot. So a lot of it is just kind of plug and play and figuring out what handles it the best.
Of your main hybrids, do you have one that you think would tolerate it better?
You know,
is it too early to tell? You just haven't had enough pressure to assess it?
I don't know if I've had enough pressure where I can see it in this specific environment. We do have areas where these same products go, and there's definitely some that do handle it better, and it doesn't really take you much by surprise. Like a 9762 great agronomic package, it seems to handle it a little bit better than maybe like a 9990.
Yeah.
It just seems to go suit and suit. And I'm not saying that's the end all be all, but that's just kind of what we have observed.
Yeah, I'd agree with those observations. Talked quite a bit about diseases. Are you seeing many diseases in soybeans? I know we talked a lot about corn stuff here. I know a little bit of white mold, which surprised me again that we've seen some of that, given how dry we were through June, July, like I had mentioned. But there is a few patches here and there, and a little bit of sudden death.
Yep. And I don't think we should really probably be surprised by that. But again, it's not extremely widespread. It's not like a bad white mold year. This is actually, you know, there is obviously pockets of SDS out there. It's not as significant as what I've seen in the past. Earlier on, maybe I saw in parts a little bit more IDC than what I was maybe anticipating. But, you know, that kind of combated itself a little bit. But otherwise, you know, the beans have been pretty clean for the most part. But yeah, there's those pop-up areas, and it's no different than I think what I would call, whatever we call a normal year.
Definitely. Well, so insects, we didn't talk about insects much now. How about that? I know, like, on the aphid side of things, I was a little surprised with how many aphids we ended up having this year, but they came later than what traditionally I expect them to be here. And you know, instead of like the first week of August, it seemed like they came in like the second and third week.
Yeah. I mean, it was extremely prolonged is what it felt like. And it's, I mean, you could just throw darts at the wall on when was the right time to actually spray, because there was pressure earlier on too, but it wasn't probably as significant as what we saw, as you said, it graduated on through and to the end of August almost, it seemed like.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you've noticed in the beans? Were there other, not the
beans,
really?
Beans, no. I mean, like, not really probably in north central Iowa, southern Minnesota. There's parts I got in where I saw some thistle caterpillar. Not significant like it has been in other years. Japanese beetle. But really up here, we were pretty clean as far as that goes, except for the aphids that came in late and pretty significantly.
Yeah, I guess one thing I would throw in there, though, it's, and I don't know how significant the damage is they cause, but grasshoppers.
Grasshoppers, yeah.
And around the edges, lots of feeding. I don't know. Like I said, it's hard to measure how detrimental that is for yield, but you could sure notice them.
Oh,
that's for sure.
It was. It's probably the worst grasshopper year. And that actually I've seen in both corn and soybeans, again, around the edges, around ditches, waterways, stuff like that. But, you know, those first couple rows in there on the edges, I mean, there's a lot of defoliation, both in corn and soybeans. Probably the most grasshoppers I've ever seen in a season. And they're still kind of lingering out. They're pretty heavy there right around tassel for corn. And then it seemed to dampen off. And now it seems that there's a little bit more influx of them as well.
Yeah, definitely. Big one for corn, of course, is rootworms. And what are you seeing for rootworm beetles and pressure out there? Have you dug some roots? Or
you know, I have. There's significant pressure out there on both rotation and corn on corn fields. Last year, I would say, was probably the worst pressure I've seen. This year is still pretty bad, but I didn't really see as much feeding as I did last year.
Okay.
And as many disasters, but the beetles are definitely present. So going into next year, thinking about that, you can walk into cornfields right now and you're still seeing many stages of life of both the westerns and the northerns. That's been going on. I think I saw my first beetle July 3rd.
Okay.
And the previous year I saw June 21st. And a lot of that does have to do with planting day too, because we're a little bit more delayed this year.
Yep.
But we're going to be seeing these beetles just kind of keep on moving on into fall. And it's something to definitely be thinking about. I mean, utilize the technologies, go from there. And, you know, in a lot of situations, just rotating to beans is probably the best answer, because the pressure is a lot more significant than what we've seen these last 2 years than we saw like the previous three or four.
Right, definitely. What's the percentage? Do you think there's a breakdown on like what you're seeing for beetles, northern versus western?
Right now, definitely more westerns. Historically, I mean, by the book, it would tell you a lot of the northerns would probably be out here by now, but they're just not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would say earlier on, for the first couple weeks when I found a rootworm, it was all northerns, and the pressure was steady. It wasn't catastrophic, but they were definitely present. Mm-hmm. And as we kind of moved on through July and into August, I would say there's a couple weeks there was 50-50, and now I would say 80% of them out there plus is westerns. And you'll find northerns here and there, but predominantly westerns right now, which makes sense, but still have lingering stage of northerns.
Yeah. So, but overall, do you think it's about 50-50?
50-50. I mean, as pressure goes, from what I've seen from the start to now, I would say it's probably around 50-50.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, you know, 10 years ago, there wasn't hardly a western in this area. That's really changed.
It has been. And, you know, I'm seeing northerns in spots where I historically don't see them either.
Okay. Interesting stuff. So I think you and I probably both agree, if a person wants to do corn on corn next year, make sure you have a good handle on what your rootworm pressure might be and make plans to have something to keep those things at bay. You know, we've talked a little bit about the weather this year, and also you brought up Physoderma. And that's one disease that I'm thinking about particularly as we get into fall here, because we had that certain areas had hellish winds come through.
Yep.
And lean corn over, or unfortunately in some areas it even green snapped. And I think that put a lot of pressure on those plants and opened them up for some infections. And one of them I think of is that Physoderma, right? So going into fall here, I hope guys are kind of checking and keeping an eye on some of these fields, knowing what kind of standability they might have or not have out there, you know. So what are your thoughts on that? Are you, I know you walk tons and tons of fields. Are you concerned going into harvest for some of that stuff?
I wouldn't necessarily say specifically Physoderma. Yes, anytime a plant's been compromised, especially when we're talking about with the July 4th or 5th wind that we had here out right along Highway 9, yeah, I mean, that was pretty significant. So any of those plants that were compromised, definitely a vector for disease. But it's overall, I mean, kind of be selecting farms that you think, okay, this needs to be on a priority when we start going. Try doing the push test, try doing the pinch test, lower stock, because, I mean, we're still going to probably see anthracnose and, mm-hmm. and other stock diseases like that as we go. You know, with heat like this, I know we're going to cool down. I mean, this plant is moving fairly rapidly still. It's going to be field by field, and you want to prioritize that. In that case, you might be picking a little bit wetter corn, but it's probably better than picking it up off the ground.
Definitely, yeah. That's for sure. You know, and last, you mentioned anthracnose too. In the last week or two, I've seen some of that top dieback,
yep,
which is characteristic of the anthracnose, starting to show up just a little bit here now too. So
further south of here, I've noticed it quite a bit more. I mean, I had a lot of guys calling me wondering why the tops were dying out. And I've seen it more delayed up here, but yes. So it's probably definitely in the plant. Can you go to pick it out right now? Because for the most part, we're fairly healthy still, but that does cannibalize the plant extremely fast.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, so as I mentioned, it's September 20th right now. Harvest is around the corner. Do you have some expectations going into fall? Or I know I'm very cautious because I feel like there's going to be a ton of variability out there.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of swings in yields, depending on what area you're in, what kind of weather you had. If you caught good rains earlier, maybe makes a bigger difference. Is that sort of what you're seeing too, or?
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, obviously, one thing we have to also put into perspective is the areas that did get wind damaged.
Yes.
You know, we probably didn't have full yield potential there. Again, I think we're going to have some solid yields, especially in this Winnebago, Worth County area, parts of Kossuth, parts of southern Minnesota. But you don't have to go too far off to find some pockets that missed a lot of rain. So
right.
I can travel 50 miles and we are off by 15 plus inches of rain compared to what we have up here.
Right.
So I do believe we have some pretty solid crop out there. One thing I did notice this compared to last year, because we were pretty fortunate last year to pull some pretty good corn and some good soybeans, is that we did experience a fair amount of heat right around tassel or pollination. And there's a lot more tip back out there than what we probably want to see. I do believe that the plants and the ears responded pretty well to it, but there's still a little bit of a loss there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's very significant, but again, that could be the difference between 200 bushel corn and 220 bushel corn. Not going to put a number on it, but I do think that we're going to be in the ballpark of what I would call like an average to above average year.
Yeah. That triggers something with me. So, you know, we talk about Earflex a lot as a seed salesman, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a mindset that Earflex is just simply the length,
yep,
of an ear, you know, but it's more than that, isn't it?
Oh,
could,
yeah,
you describe what you see from Earflex?
I think about kernel rows around, not just the length of the ear, but also too, I mean, now they're really talking about, the industry has in general in the last 5 years, is kernel flex.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you got to think about it. We have gotten some pretty good rains during grain fill, and those bigger, less cobby type ears, I mean, they're going to fill out and have that weight that we probably historically wouldn't get. So if you're short 10 kernels a long way and we can fill out what's there, we're going to be sitting in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I kind of think about, you know, it's not just length. I mean, it's kernel rows around and just those kernels in general.
Right. So, yeah, you could have an ear that's maybe 14 around, but those kernels, if they get really deep and add test weight, it might surprise you.
Absolutely. And that's one way, like, I have people that ask me every year, you know, what are your kernel counts? And that can vary so much,
right,
because there's so much genetic diversity out here in the industry now, you know, Baird to a Corteva, something like that. Those are completely different genetic types. Kernel count is not going to get you the final result, because I've seen plants that are 40 by 20 around lose to plants that are ears that are 40 by 14 around, and it,
right,
all comes back down to weight, and that's what we want.
Yep, we sell pounds, I, yep, guess. So, yeah. Well, Blake, It's been a pleasure visiting with you today. Thanks for coming on. If the people listening have any questions about any of the topics that we covered here today, feel free to contact AFS. Get a hold of us at our website at afschem.com or give us a call at one of our locations. Thank you and have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Agronomy for Farmer Success. If you'd like any additional information, please contact your trusted Osmus Farm Supply agronomist. Please make sure to subscribe to Agronomy for Farmer Success on your podcast player of choice, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and more, to be notified when new episodes become available.